Thank you very much, Precious Rabbi Bacon, Dr. Nissel. It's a pleasure to welcome you all to Yeshiva University and to welcome some of you back to Yeshiva University. And I'd like to just share some words of Torah with you as you prepare through your orientation, and please God, you'll start having deeper conversations with your madrichim. 26 years ago, when I was still a student here at Yeshiva University, it was a time in which the students of Yeshiva University were very involved with the Soviet Jewry movement. It was a time in which Jews could not learn in the Soviet Union. And Yeshiva University, actually, and a lot of it had to do with some of the Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Soloveitchik was actually a little bit involved with this. We would go to the Soviet Union, and we would teach Torah underground. And we would prepare for a year for this training. In fact, is Zach Katz here? Zach Katz's father actually went with me on this trip to the Soviet Union. And in fact, I don't know if they still give this course at YU, but we actually took Russian as our foreign language. I don't even know if that's a requirement anymore. But the bottom line, I think Hebrew is now the foreign language requirement. In our days, it was expected you knew Hebrew also. But the reason why they taught Russian or scientific Russian was because in order to go to the Soviet Union, you had to be able to read Russian because you couldn't visit Refuseniks by taxi, which was run by the KGB. You actually had to use the subway system. And there was no English in the subway system because they wanted all tourists to use the KGB taxi drivers. And we prepared for a year for this. This is not the time to go into the preparations, but just to give you one example, instead of having any type of electronic mechanism to keep all the addresses of the refuseniks, we would have a crossword puzzle. Up and down was the names, across were the addresses, and we just had a crossword puzzle book with us that every single page was a different refusenik with the addresses again and the names, up and down and across, so that we could follow up and we didn't have to commit it all to memory. We went to three different places. We taught Gemara in Moscow. We gave Shiurim Erev Pesach in Leningrad. And the most dangerous place we went to was a place called Tallinn, Estonia, where we led a pre-Pesach Seder, the first Seder, at least the Israeli government told us, since the Shoah. And the Israeli government had arranged for actually a movie crew to follow us. It was actually for our protection. And they made a movie about our trip. I've only seen the movie once, One Generation More, so that the BBC movie would actually protect us and that we wouldn't be formally arrested. We ran this Pesach Seder, and at the end of the Pesach Seder, we actually announced that we'd like to have Minyan for the first time since the Shoah in Tallinn, Estonia. And by a show of hands, we asked who would come to the minyan. Only 10 people raised their hands. Parenthetically, all those 10 people lost power and phone use the next day. No electricity, no phone. But when we got to the shul, which hadn't really been used since around the time of the Shoah, we found siddurim that were pre-Shoah printed siddurim, and we started running an explanatory service. Now the problem is we spoke Hebrew and English. Most of the Jews there did not speak Hebrew, and some of them spoke English, so we had an interpreter. During the while we were running this explanatory service, we said Adon Olam, some of the brachas, Shema, and we got to Shemona Esrei. How do you run an explanatory service and do Shemona Esrei when you really can't effectively communicate? And so I remembered a story from the Baal Shem Tov, and I decided I would use the story. There's a famous Baal Shem Tov story where a kid couldn't say any of the Hebrew words and basically was whistling. And basically, Baal Shem Tov spoke about the fact how that was the most important tefillah in all of the shul. So I can't really whistle, so that wouldn't work. But I figured what we would do is we'd take three steps backwards and three steps forward, and we would say the Aleph Beis together, the whole group. The shul was full. We said Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. We went through the whole Aleph Beis and then took three steps backwards and forwards when we finished. And the minute we finished Shemoneh Esrei, the KGB came into the room, and we were arrested. And we were taught, and we were basically put on buses, and we were sent to, at that time, East Germany, which was a communist country. And we were unsure of our fate at that point in time. The moment before we were arrested, I had worn tefillin during the davening. A kid, a 13-year-old kid that I had become a little bit friendly with over our time in Tallinn, Estonia, asked me for my tefillin. I took off my tefillin, I gave it to him, and didn't really have time to show him how to use it. The KGB was waiting, and they weren't so friendly. And eventually, we made our way back to New York. Several years later, when I moved to Boca Raton, Florida, before we had day schools in Boca Raton, I was taken to the day school in Miami Beach, Florida, Hillel Day School. And I was walked through the halls of Hillel Day School to introduce me to this day school, which was 50 miles away from Boca Raton. And as I'm walking through the hallways, a kid comes over to me that I didn't recognize or know. He was then a senior in high school, and he gives me this unbelievable hug. A little strange. Again, I had just been in Florida for just a few days. And when I turned to him and asked him who he was, he whispered into my ear, Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. It was the kid that I had given the tefillin to. He reminded me and told me then that I had not told him that you don't wear tefillin on Shabbos. And until he came to the United States, he actually wore tefillin 7 days a week instead of 6 days a week. And I'm reminded of this story for the following reason, and that is that each and every one of us have to find our own voice, our own way of connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And for this student, this Soviet refusenik, that Aleph Beis ultimately became a commitment to Torah observance, ultimately became a way in which he learned how to daven, ultimately learned that he doesn't wear tefillin 7 days a week, but 6 days a week, and ultimately connected him to his Masorah, to his Torah, to the immortality of the Jewish people. We're in the middle of the month of Elul. We blow the shofar every single day till we get to the point of Rosh Hashanah that we're told in Halacha that there are two forms of tekiot. Tekiot de miyushav and tekiot de ma'umad. Literally translated as the sitting blast, tekiot de miyushav, and literally translated as tekiot de ma'umad, the standing blast. What's the difference between tekiot de miyushav and tekiot de ma'umad, the sitting and standing blast? There are some halachic differences, and now is not the time to go into them. Some people say that one is done b'neshima achas, some of the blasts, and in one set of blasts it's not done b'neshima achas. But the most important thing that always bothered me is no tradition says that you sit for these tekios, for the first set of tekios de miyushav, yet they are called tekios de miyushav. And depending on your minhag, they're either blown before the silent Shemoneh Esrei, before the Shtilah Shemoneh Esrei, or during the Shtilah Shemoneh Esrei. Those are called tekiot de miyushav. And then, in the repetition of the Amidah, there are the tekiot de ma'umad, the standing blasts. I always understood the difference between these two sets of blasts as reminding each and every one of us that as Jews, we have to respond to two sets of shofar blasts. The first one is tekiot de miyushav. When we are sitting, not literally sitting, but when we are sitting as individuals, we have to ask ourselves, as individuals, how have we grown in our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What is our connection? How have I grown as a Bet Torah? What have I done to feel a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? The answer to that is, cannot be, oh, you know what, I hope how I'm connected better to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? I help someone become more observant. Or I help an individual by being involved in a soup kitchen. Or I help by helping the community in a different way. Kiyos and Yushah say to each and every one of us that we have a special relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu as individuals, standing away from the community. We blow those shofar blasts not as part of a community, but either during the Steinwich Mona Esrei or right before that, to ask ourselves, what is our sacred connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as individuals? And then there's Tekiyot HaMe'umad. Tekiyot HaMe'umad are shofar blasts that are blown in the communal tefillah, in the Shemona Esrei that everyone is part of. Because as a Jew, it's not enough for me to have a connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that's only based on my personal avoda with Hashem. But part of my personal avoda with Hashem is, have I done something for the klal? Have I done something for the larger community? Have I interacted with the larger community? If the only thing I can say is that I've grown as an individual alone, then I also have not fulfilled the obligations of the Tekiyot HaMe'umad, of the standing glass. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a very famous tshuva, and he says, B'nai Yeshiva, that don't have the ability to give meiser with their money, have to give meiser with their time. Because each and every one of us has to listen to the Kios de Miyushav, those blasts as we grow as individuals, and those blasts of Kios de Me'umad as we grow as part of a kihilah, as part of Am Yisrael, as part of Knesset Yisrael. And so the question that I want to leave you with as you begin your journey at YU, at Yeshiva Sremeinu Yitzchak HaChanan, is how do you find your own Aleph Beis connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How will you find your own tefillah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How will you make your own connection? Each and every one of us has to find our own call, our own voice. That voice has to be part of Tekiyos de Miyushav. We have to be selfish at this time in our life and make sure we grow as B'nai Torah, because this is the best time for you to grow as B'nai Torah. I would say that the Tekiyos de Miyushav, those blasts that you blow as an individual, are much more important than Tekiyot HaMe'umad, than the blasts that you blow as contributing to the community at this stage in your life. For the simple reason that if you grow as a Ben Torah, if you grow and you solidify your understanding of relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the future you'll be able to give so much more back to the community. But you also have to find time in which you can play a role in the wonderful symphony of experiences that YU will offer you. And you have to do it in a measured way. And that's why you have people like Rabbi Bacon and Dr. Nissel, and hopefully I can be helpful, and others, all your Rabbeim and Mechanchim and all the Mashkichim, to help you with that balance. But the truth is that the Aleph Beis story is not just about a kid in the Soviet Union in Tallinn, Estonia. Truth is that each and every one of us has to find our way to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to create our own special tefillah. And so the bracha that I'd like to extend to each and every one of you, and the bracha that I'd like to extend to myself, is that during this month of Elul, in which we're involved with the avoda of becoming better people, that we recognize our responsibility to listen and create our own sacred symphony with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, both in the Tekiyos de Miyushav, in making sure that we find the right time to grow in Torah, and to grow through the experiences that we'll have in the college, which, if properly orchestrated, are also Torah experiences, and at the same time, find those few precious moments to also be involved in the Tekiyos de Me'umad, to be involved with the opportunity to connect to the larger klal. The greatest beneficiaries of this experience will be you. In 25 years from now, you will remember the wonderful opportunities that you have here. It's up to you to decide whether you're going to create that experience. It's up for you to decide if you're going to take advantage of everything that YU has to offer you. And to close, as Rabbi Bacon said, I'm the vice president in charge of what we do in the communities throughout the world. But more importantly, my responsibilities is I work for you. I'm here to help you. And if there's ever a time that you feel that there's an impediment for you to achieve what you want to achieve in your Tekiyos de Me'umad as an individual, or Tekiyos de Me'umad in your service to Klal, feel free to come by. I will always, Emir Tashem, be there to be helpful to you. And there are so many others in this wonderful yeshiva that are here to help you orchestrate and navigate the opportunity for you to benefit from those tekios de miyushav and those tekios de meumad, of being able to be part of both sets of shofar blasts and to create your own special tefillah, your own special connection with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Thank you.